Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Mickey Lee. We're here, me and Legs McNeil are here on JBTV with our new book, I Slept With Joey Ramone, soon to be a major motion picture, based on this book about Joey Ramone's life.
Are you ready for a great classic podcast?
JBTV, the respected name in music TV.
These are podcasts that no one has heard in many years. This is the JBTV podcast series, The Classics.
JBTV.
Hi, I'm Jerry Bryant, and welcome to the JBTV podcast. On this edition...
Hi, I'm Legs McNeil.
Hi, I'm Mickey Lee.
I Slept with Joey Ramone, a family memoir, plus excerpts with the one, the only, Joey Ramone.
This guy who wanted to manage us once, who made a deal like that.
Really? You know,
he'll take your soul, but he'll make you famous.
Uh-huh.
I think he's Peter Frampton's manager or something like that.
Well, welcome to JBTV.
Thank you.
Yes, it's a pleasure having you guys here. And I got to say, this book is absolutely amazing. And it's amazing how over the years, the one thing that keeps screwing everything up, money.
The Ramones didn't really make a lot of money. So the smaller the pie is, the smaller the economics is, you know, everybody gets a lot cheaper and they're, you know, there's not a lot of crumbs to go around. Mm-hmm. Had the Ramones sold millions of copies of albums, I think Joey would have been much more generous. You know, because Joey was an extremely generous guy, as we both know.
Okay, so at 10 years old, I was introduced to Johnny Ramone and Tommy Ramone by a friend of mine who's my age, but his older brother played in a band with those guys. So that's when I first met them. I was in a band with Johnny and Tommy when I was 14, introduced them to Joey. So when the Ramones started, I was their roadie, right? Then there was nobody else they could find to work for them, and I made it easy for them to get their show from stopping every 2 seconds to change a string to the 30-minute nonstop barrage, right? When they were in the studio recording their first album, they were having trouble with the background vocals, so I wound up singing all the background vocals on the first album, including...
Did you sing all of them, or was there some other...
90% of them.
Who else sang on the song?
Tommy sang a little bit.
Tommy sang it. Who else? Did the engineer, the guy?
The engineer sang a little bit on I Want to Be Your Boyfriend. But I did the oohs in the middle.
Because he could harmonize. I mean, basically, if you see Mickey singing, he has Joey's voice. Mm-hmm. And they harmonize great together.
Yeah. You sound so much like him.
Well, that's why it worked on this album. Because I sounded somewhat like him, but it wasn't him.
It sounds like Joey's harmonizing with himself.
Mm-hmm. But you know the song Judy is a Punk?
Mm-hmm.
In the middle, there's a long thing that goes, ooh.
That's you?
That's me.
Wow.
Right. So I also did the oohs on the Blitzkrieg Bop.
Mm-hmm.
I was working for the band. They were paying me $50 a week. I was, you know.
Now that's outrageous. That kind of money. Well, I mean, you were overpaid.
Right. I was overpaid.
Yeah, really. You should have been working for 40.
You only had to work a show. It's only an hour a night.
I only had to keep borrowing money from everybody I knew to pay my rent while I'm roading for the Ramones.
Yeah, but you got to also remember there was absolutely no money in New York at that time. $50. A week was
pretty, a lot.
Put it this way: when I stopped working for the Ramones, I went to work for the Talking Heads for a little while, and they paid me in one night what the Ramones were paying me for a whole week. So I wouldn't really.
Did you feel guilty about that? You know, I am only really worth 50. No,
you know, talk to those guys; they'll tell you what I'm worth.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I sing all these background vocals on that, and. Let It Go for years and years. And then 1990, Bud Light uses the song for a
small, insignificant company.
With no money. Nobody ever heard it.
Yeah.
So it's running 30 times a day, and I'm hearing my voice on this TV commercial. And I had done a little work in jingles, and I know...
That you get residuals, and you get session fees.
You can do that, you know, depending on the arrangement. I obviously did that as... It wasn't a situation where... I was hired as a background vocalist for a spot that was just being made. It was already recorded.
Right.
They got $100,000 from Budweiser, which, as Leg says, you know, it's not a huge amount, but significant.
And also, we got to remember that Sire owned half their publishing. So,
they got half of it.
So then they got half of it right off the top. So then there's $50,000 to split.
And then I'm sure they found some fees and miscellaneous expenses to throw. Because, you know, these accountants are good at that. You know?
I was pretty broke at the time. My band that I had at the time was not making a hell of a lot of money. I would have been happy if they gave
$500 or $5,000.
$500 would have, exactly.
I think what Mickey really would have liked.
You don't know anything about it.
What would have been someone to appreciate that he had sang and helped this band along, and you know, and just someone say, hey, thanks, you know, thank you, and a small check, even no check at all, just to listen,
we didn't make a hell of a lot of money on this,
but we acknowledge your contribution,
right? And you know, sorry about that, whatever. But what I got was the total opposite, and it was never. This was not something between me and my brother, and I never meant it to be that way, and I never approached it that way. This was between me and the Ramones and their management.
How are we doing?
Oh, I was doing good.
Oh, good.
I called the lawyer just to have an inquiry call put in to see how long.
Having one of those days, you know, the mind to the connection is like.
I wanted to do a voice recognition on the track.
If I wanted to pursue it, you know. My lawyer was saying, listen, you could stand to be making anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000 for something like this.
Sounds good. Mm-hmm. Like Pete Townsend.
If it's regional, whatever. He said, let me just put in a phone call to the Ramones manager.
They say, well, it's almost on now.
He didn't really get much of a response except that they didn't want to give me anything.
Yeah.
Really clever and unique. Mm-hmm. And he's great. He's the original punk rocker that Tom Waits, you know?
The main thing that bothered me was that when the first album came out, when I went into the studio and did these vocals, everybody was like, man, thanks, you saved the day. What name do you want on the album? We'll give you a credit for a background vocal. Mm-hmm. But they didn't, because John said he didn't want to have any other names on there because he didn't want people to be confused as to who was in the band. Yeah, get that look that he just
ridiculous.
Right. Legs has a similar story about being.
I was the gorilla on the cover of the Animal Boy album, and I said, Joey said, well, you know, you can do it for credit. And
Legs just had a career trying to be play gorillas at the time.
A whole group was spun out of that whole idea.
Yes. Well, what's unfortunate is that Zippy the TV chimp that they're holding in front of the gorilla cage went on to become the monkey cam on David Letterman. Do you remember him?
Oh, yeah, and he'd run around and do stuff. Exactly.
Which I thought, oh, my God, a chimp upstaging the Ramones. I mean, what could be worse?
Well, they gave him his start, though.
Yeah, I know.
But Zippy the chimp went on to become this huge star, and the Ramones were still, you know, playing in nightclubs.
But anyway, I called Joe, and I said, I thought I was going to get credit, you know? And Joey said, oh, Johnny wanted... He was kind of giggling, so I think he kind of set me up. He said,
"Joey didn't want to put your name on there because Johnny didn't want to put your name on there because he wanted everybody to think the chimp was real.
No, to think the gorillas were real. Oh, the gorillas were real. Yeah, because the chimp was
right.
Real.
The chimp was real.
So of course the chimp gets the career.
Right, but you know what the chimp did? The gorilla heads were made out of these." Wood, so the eyes were up here, and you actually, your eye hole, you look through the mouth. But every time they cut, Richie Ramone was holding Zippy the TV chimp, he would turn around, he'd punch me in the head, and the thing would rear up on my head and slam down on me, and it was solid wood.
Oh my God.
I mean, I should have.
This is why Zippy got the big bucks.
Yeah, because he was such a vicious little chimp. Mm-hmm. And. That Zippy, if I get Zippy in a dark alley, man, we're gonna go mono e chimpo.
Actually, I had paid Zippy to punch Legs.
$5 a punch.
I'm gonna kick the chimp out of him.
What's his name? Boy, my brain. I'm just brain dead today, kids.
That's a brain dead show.
Just, that's what started the big fight between my brother and I. It became a big issue. You know, he said, "I heard you called the lawyer." You know,
yeah, and, that's all you needed to hear.
And I said, "Yeah." I said, "You know, he called to just make an inquiry call to see if it was worth pursuing and if there was anything in there for me." And he said, "Well, background singers don't get paid." I said, "That's not true. You know, background singers get paid." And then he said to me, "Well, you only want money because you're a failure and a loser and you didn't make it." Yeah, so that started a whole, you know, big brotherly...
Conundrum,
yeah. And it was an off again, on again thing. And there were other issues, but that probably delved way back into our childhood, you know.
Well, we're on TV, so, you know, I want people to know I'm not in Sponge.
Well, it's an awesome book. So many good stories in there. You know, Joey did two interviews with us here at JBTV.
I bet he did. That's all, just two.
And he said nobody would let him talk. Was that true?
Oh, yeah, in the beginning?
Yes.
Yeah. It was...
it's funny to have a guy saying, "Nobody lets me talk." But, you know...
No, but you remember in the beginning days, Johnny didn't want them to come off. He thought they had this dumb image, D-U-M-B. And so he'd get Tommy to talk because he thought Tommy was smarter. And he thought, you know, Joey and Dee Dee were kind of idiots, you know, and didn't want them. But of course, they were the most fascinating. They were the ones everyone wanted to talk to. Mm-hmm. And in fact, when we put Joey on the cover alone... on Punk Magazine number 3. You know, that was the first time the Ramones appeared on a magazine cover. I think Johnny was really pissed.
Yep.
Like some cooking tips. Are you good?
Cooking tips.
You ever cook anything over these years?
I've cooked an egg.
Yeah?
Just Joey, so...
I like the cover. I thought it was a great cover.
Yeah. The cover worked really well. Yeah. But the other thing you got to keep in mind is that... it wasn't so much of a forced issue. Joey was a very, very quiet...
Very shy guy.
I mean, he, you know, didn't really talk that much anyway, you know.
Yeah. And
was it good for you?
Yeah, it was all right. You know,
was it the soft, hard, or...
You know, these days you have to cook eggs longer than in years gone by.
Because the E. coli or whatever they
call
it.
Yeah, well, it's really not, it's not even that. It's just that they take a lot longer to manifest.
Really?
Yeah.
It's all that stuff they put in those chickens.
I know, it's all those... antibiotics and all this
EDTA, I think it's called. We learned that from the OJ trial. Everything he eats got EDTA, so that's we'll blame
it's
it
that
on
that. KMDA or KMF. I don't know what it is. It's just you know, it's these more sophisticated times that we live in.
And we would just sit around. I guess another sit-down. I guess it's a family thing I've noticed here. Because that was the only sit-down interview I've done.
Are we in the same spot?
We're in a different studio.
We have to do things a little differently today than we did when I was a youngster back in the 30s.
Kind of a similarity between us.
Yeah, I know.
That's when the punk era really started.
That was a good time to buy stock.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can get Coca-Cola for 10 bucks.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, we heard it was flying out of New York windows, stock certificates. So you could just pick them up.
I know. It was a good time. Yeah. You know, you can get well, that was before Microsoft.
Here, let's... this is good for our viewer and audience. Frank Black came in and did a song about the Ramones. And I thought it would be cool because I knew that Joey was coming in.
Right. It's opportunity. So I don't know, you probably heard this already, or I'm not sure.
Oh, I'm excited. Okay.
He was excited there, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Can't you tell?
Hey, it's Frank.
Videos? Oh, yeah. We had Joey Ramone on the show.
Really?
He, like, talked for a whole hour. He, like, talked about everything. He had this cab ride from hell that he wrote a song about and stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, he's the greatest.
It was only 2 years then.
So anyway, you know, Motorhead. Motorhead, you know, they had a song about the Ramones on their 1916 album called Ramones.
Did you ever hear that song?
No, of course.
Yeah.
The Ramones as well, kind of a love song. And it's a kind of a cryptic song, like the John Denver one was called Czar. And this is not called
songs,
you know,
on the
Ramones.
Show.
Oh, cool.
This is called I Heard Ramona Sing. And it goes a little something like this. hope to someday make a video for this. I had so many problems, and then I got me a Walkman. I really liked it a lot, and they walked right in and they saw them. They walked right in and they saw them. I heard Ramona sing, and I heard everything. The speed they're traveling, they're the only thing. Ramona. There were moments in the night. It was alright.
So it really has nothing to do with the Ramones. Yeah, this song.
Right. It's just sang the song.
You just sang it. Okay.
And you made Joey endure this torture of this guy singing. You're really a great guy.
This is the Pixies. Frank Black or Black
Frank
Francis.
Black's great, man. He's great. Yeah.
Oh, tell him to keep his day job.
This is his day job.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so now you guys got to sit through this. It's like four
Right.
degrees of...
so glad we came.
Well, I'll turn that down now. No, but I think it's funny because we're watching TV, watching Frank Black, and now we're watching... This is like 15 years later or whatever it is, and we're watching it again on television.
So I'm doing it. I'm like, I haven't fully learned how to do work the computer yet. But
you got to know enough just to get by on it.
I do like... You know, we kind of fax each other, and I do, like, road reports. I write about the Ramones from my perspective, and I write about new bands I like, and I conceived an event recently during the McIntosh New Music Festival in New York City, and it's pretty amazing and fascinating. You know, the computer's sort of like the link to the... to the universe these days, you know, it's like the black hole to the universe or whatever.
Plus, you know, you got to remember that the 80s for the Ramones was the worst time ever. I mean, I was there on the Tom Snyder show, and Tom Snyder didn't even show up. They had some blonde woman filling in.
Oh no!
That kind of typifies what the humiliation and the disappointment and frustration of the 80s for the Ramones.
Definitely cool. I mean, like, it's like another world out there if you're, like, online or hooked up, you know? So it's kind of cool. It's good. It's, you know, it's like, but I really, when it comes to computers and rock and roll, I don't see where the two connect. I mean, rock and roll is primal, and it should stay that way, and I'm a caveman at heart.
I met Tom Snyder once. I was in a band called the Rattlers, and David Merrill, who's the son of the opera singer Robert Merrill, was the bass player, and they were both judging the Miss America pageant in Atlantic City. We went down there, and Tom Snyder takes me and Dave over the side and says, listen, I know you guys are musicians. You wouldn't happen to have a little... this on you.
And he liked smoking pot.
He did.
Tom Snyder was a pothead? You learn something new every day, huh?
I was breaking Chicago news here.
Really.
Tom Snyder... pothead.
Yeah.
Film at 11.
The late, great Tom Snyder. Great, he's great, gone great. Now. Yeah. But, you know, and I learned...
And the Tom Snyder pot dealers keep coming out of the woodwork. I hear it's up to 14 and 15... dealers that he had now.
Wow, it's just like
they say I was Tom. They come out and say they write a book like I was Tom.
Tiger's Mistresses.
I smoked with Tom Snyder.
I haven't really followed this. How many mistresses did Tiger Woods have?
Up to 50.
It's the way to go. It's got that warmth.
Mm-hmm. It just shows you when you're on the road having fun, just having fun, and things like this come back to haunt you. You know. But
fun can haunt you.
I mean, they're much better now. There's when people learned how to like master them better, because when they first came out, they were kind of cold.
No mistresses have come forward for Mickey.
They had no depth, you know, no richness, no, you know. Mm-hmm. And now they Sometimes they sound better. It depends who's mastering them or whatever.
That was the good old age of groupies.
It was, but that's actually when I...
you got married.
I got... Well, no, I had my first girlfriend.
Ah.
So
you were being loyal and
yeah. It was
what an idiot.
It was bad timing.
What an idiot.
Yeah, well, we have heart. And you gotta be in tune with, you know... A lot of people aren't. They just make music, and it's cold and sterile, you know. But it sells.
I should have been a golf pro.
Yeah.
Cool. We'll see some music videos on the show. What would you like to see of the Ramones?
Actually, there's a video that I appear in. I make a little cameo in. It called...
It's all about you, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah. So once you know...
He keeps trying to push me away. Help! 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 I'm going back into the abyss!
Keep going. Keep going. All right. A little further.
What's that Twilight Zone where the kid gets lost in the other dimension? Remember that?
Great movie? Yeah, and he was like in the wall or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Can we do that with legs?
Yeah. Well, you're back in 63 right now.
Mickey, help me!
Let me play a video called Something to Believe In.
Okay.
Oh, that'd be great.
And there's a lot of actually Richie Stotz is in it, and a lot of people from the music scene in the Lower East Side, and I think Michael Jackson's in it too.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure. Take a quick look closely. You might see.
No, is he really?
I think.
How much did this video cost back then? Was this like 50 cents?
How much you got?
No. I mean, when you did the video, I mean, it was...
Oh, well, I didn't do it. It was my brother's band. I had my own band called The Rattlers.
I mean, did you know about what went on with that? Because you were sort of in it.
Everything they did was low budget.
Okay.
So I couldn't really give you
but
the...
But not all of it looked low budget.
Probably the lowest budget that they could get away with. Yeah.
Actually, no, this one it looks like it might have cost a bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought they all looked good. I didn't have any problems
with that. Because
the music was always where I came from, especially. You know, it's like if the music isn't good, you can have the best video with millions of extras and crane shots and explosions, but if the song sucks, you know.
Well, that's about 90% of the videos you're talking about, you know. George Seminara, a great friend of Joey's and a good friend of mine also, is responsible for the direction of and production of most of the Ramones videos. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to give a shout out to George. And let's check out the video.
Okay, here it is right now on your alternative show from downtown Chicago. And this is an awesome book that you have to get. It has a whole pile of intimate stories about things and all the good old days of drugs, sex, rock and roll, the tension between the band when you're in love with the same woman, you know. And
it's a family book.
It's a family thing. And it talks about how many millions and billions of dollars they didn't make. Which is, I guess, most like JBTV, because when you do things for the love of music, you know. Now, you had this great publication that's no longer around, right?
Right. Well, actually, John Holmstrom started it with Jed Dunn, and John was the editor, and Jed Dunn was the publisher until we fired Jed, and I was the resident punk, since it couldn't come up with any other title that I was suited for.
And that sounded like resident drunk, so it was close.
Which I was, but it was a lot of fun, yeah. And actually, R. Crumb wrote us a letter and said, you know, you'll have a lot of fun putting out your little magazine until you get tired of not making any money. Mm-hmm. And he was right.
Wow.
You know, because we had done, there was this great cartoonist called Robert Romanoli. You remember him? Yeah. And he did this great parody of Mr. Natural. I mean, it looked exactly like him. And Mr. Natural was like walking in the desert, you know, contemplating how much of a failure he was. And then some hot little R. Crumb girl comes out and goes, oh, I used to read your comic. My older sister had your comic books. And it's like Mr. Crumb has his arm around the girl and they're walking away. And he goes, well, you might as well play out your options, you know. And he's going off to have sex with the young girl.
That was a thrilling story, really.
Well, yeah, but it perturbed R. Crumb so much, he never drew Mr. Natural again because of the... Yes. No, you never knew that. Yeah. He sent us this big...
He was intimidated that much by punk?
By Robert Romanoli. He promised to never... R. Crumb. He took it so... personally, I guess, he never drew Mr. Natural again. He wrote us this huge letter, which we published on... And that's when he said, you know, when you get tired of not making a lot of money... You know, you'll go on something else.
But, I mean, there was a time I remember when our first album came out in 1976, and we'd visit like a radio station. They'd say, if you guys only sound a little more like Toto or the Doobie Brothers, we could play you. And now everybody sounds like the Ramones, so it's kind of cool. You know?
Well, it shows you were on the right track because you're still doing it. And I haven't heard the new Doobie Brothers album yet, have you?
No. Well, the new Steely Dan album or anything.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, we always, you know, maintain, stuck to our roots, stuck to our initial ideals. You know, that's why we started in the first place. Why try and sound like something just to get a hit on the radio, you know?
Did you know what you were doing was going to become this big thing? But I don't think these guys at Punk Magazine knew it.
I don't think anybody knows at the time, because you're so dealing with the finances and all the troubles and the personal things and just trying to make your music and get it out there. Well, and then, you know,
it's like what John Lennon said about the Beatles. You know, people are always saying, "Oh, that's a great single," or that's. He says, "I just remembered, you know, who was fighting with who in the studio that day, and you know where we were going to go for dinner that night, mm-hmm. and that's what you're thinking about when you're doing this." Stuff you're not thinking I'm making history, right. You know, I'm you know, mm-hmm. gosh darn it, I'm bigger creating than, the future.
Well,
you know,
he did say something like we're bigger than Jesus. So I don't know, maybe he was thinking a little differently. You know, maybe everybody's different, you know.
Yeah,
I don't want to sound like Pearl Jam or Stone Temple Pilots for that matter, you know. I mean, let Silverchair sound that way.
Yeah, it's like an Eddie Vedder sound, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, there is a Pearl Jam. Why should there be 10 Pearl Jams, you know? Why?
But, you know, that's a lot of people do that, like on television in America. They'll get one talk show. First it was Phil Donahue and Oprah, right?
Right,
And now there's 100 talk shows. And right, how many more things can you talk about?
Well, I like all those tabloid shows. They're all, I mean, it's... You know, did you see that UFO that landed last night at the, I don't know. Yeah, well,
no, I didn't see that UFO. Oh. Did you see it?
No. But I heard about it on the tabloid.
I heard it was a good one. They're going to infiltrate the American government, and they're going to
make I heard, they're here.
Cross-marketing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, do you think this is ever going to be made into a movie?
It's very, very likely.
I don't know. I think this is it, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
The end of the line, kids.
Oh, no.
But, well, there's the Cartoon's Greatest Hits album coming in October. And matter of fact, It's Alive, which was never released in America, the double live album that was, you know, historical and highly acclaimed. And all, it's going to be released in October as well by the old record company.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're happy that's going to be out.
Well, I love your music.
Oh, well, thanks.
I'll keep playing your videos over and over and over.
Okay.
We'll show MTV.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. Oh, you know what video I like to see? I like to see the Beastie Boys, that song, Fight For Your Right.
Oh,
the party. Yeah, that's a great video, Tim.
You gotta fight for your right to party.
Because it's a story about two brothers, and right. It's everyone always wanted to make a movie of Please Kill Me, which is just which is my first book, mm-hmm. and I'll give a little plug for it. But it's just massive, and it's, you know, giant scale with you know, the New York Dolls and the Velvet Underground and Iggy and the Ramones and mm-hmm. everybody's all over the place. This is a much easier story to do. The Hollywood knows how to do. It's two brothers, and you know, as the Ramones are going along, you know, there you see the evolution of their relationship as two brothers, and I think they can do it
somehow
much easier.
I was able to, because I grew up with these guys, I was able to kind of define where that black humor came from,
right.
You know, because we were all like that. We were this bunch of outcasts from Forest Hills, and we all had this sick humor, and we were kind of proud that we had this sick humor, you know.
Also, another good thing about it is in the book, you can hear the rock and roll in it. You know, you can hear them when they go and buy their first record, which is, I think, Leslie Gore. It's my party, I'll cry. And they're going to the Paramount rock and roll shows with your dad's bringing you, and they're singing doo-wop down the street, and it's echoing through the apartment complexes. That's what's really beautiful about the book. You really can hear the rock and roll and see the evolution of rock and roll. You know, as it goes along.
You know,
I think you did a great job.
Thank you.
You really did.
It was a lot of work and really hard to get back to the to the 50s and 60s and recount how we, you know, the first time we heard rock and roll, first time we heard La Bamba on the radio, which made us kind of jump up and dance around. And
you call it what, the barb, the La Bamba?
Well,
what do you call it?
I had heard the song first, and I thought it was called Ya Baba.
Ya Baba.
You know, I thought Ya Baba. Ya Baba. You know, so my brother came home and I said, "You got to hear this song, Ya Baba, Ya Baba." He said, "What do you mean, the one about the barber?" I think he was talking about the Barber of Seville or something like that. And I said, I can't tell what it's about because he's singing too fast. And but so my mom said, no, it's in Spanish, La Bamba.
Uh-huh. To which so, I said,
where's Spanish?
You know, so. But so there's little stories like that. So you can you pinpoint for the first times that Joey Ramone heard rock and roll.
Yeah, let's just do it.
I love it.
You know, so let's be spontaneous.
Okay.
Our childhood was, very dysfunctional. Parents got divorced very early. We moved to Howard Beach. My mom got remarried. And that's where we got reintroduced to rock and roll because our stepbrother pulled this little thing out of his pocket that had a wire attached to his ear.
It was called a Walkman.
Well, you know.
It was called a transistor radio.
It was called an E-transistor.
When people had to actually listen to radio and when to hear the music, you know.
Right, but you could only hear it with one little plug in your ear, you know. And so we asked him what it was, and he pulled the little plug out of the box, and there it was, Cousin Brucey and Murray the K, and then we got reintroduced to rock
New York
and roll,
disc jockeys that
right.
really impacted music because they were at the cutting edge, and they weren't afraid to play music right away, you know? And there was a time when radio really had that kind of freedom.
Well, they were getting
you know?
Paid, too, if they do that, don't you think?
Well, you know? No, not everybody was. I know there was quite a bit of payola going on back then, but
I think I just
but that was
set myself up to get hit by a hitman or something.
You know,
all right.
Okay, so we're going to give $1 million to the first viewer. No.
a trip to see the Ramones and Pearl Jam together. This rare appearance. And it only comes
once in a lifetime.
Once in a lifetime on JBTV. Here we go.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
It sounds great.
Sounds good.
Now, what do they have to do? Pray. Pray, because the chances of getting anything from this contest. You know, if the attorneys don't think of it first, we have no chance of doing anything.
Oh.
What radio station was it?
93 QFM.
And they allowed you to, there was no playlist? You could play whatever
I could do whatever I want.
Really?
FM, nobody cared about.
Right. Hmm. For a while, though.
Well, but then, it's like
what, years? What era are you
Oh, this is like 68 to 73.
Oh,
yeah.
Somebody should do something about this.
Yeah. Do I look better than Mickey?
I guess
you can give
I guess,
me your honest,
I guess silence is your answer.
You can give me your honest opinion.
More silence. Nobody wants to tell you the truth.
I don't like this guy.
I don't know. Well, we'll have to get Marsha Clark on the case.
Right, we'll get Marsha Clark and Judge Ito.
Don't let this guy intimidate you. That's what he loves to do. He loves to dominate, intimidate, humiliate you as much as he can.
Go on, you're on a rant. Keep going. Keep whining. Like,
you know, this is going to be a great show. Coming up next.
Yes, we're doing this because we're making the pilot for our new reality show.
Well, you know, Judge Ito's going to have his own talk show now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's called
Mickey Loves Legs.
Right.
I'm suing him for every dime he's got.
Mm-hmm.
He's been ripping me off for too many years now, and I'm sick of it. I've had enough.
How would you like to spend the last 5 years getting phone calls at 1:30 in the morning blaming everything in the world on you?
What a liar this guy is. He's so full of
what
shit,
what did you do
man.
To get these phone calls?
Listen,
can you fix those
Simon and Schuster wanted me to take this guy's name off the fucking book, okay?
Can you fix the 10 typos?
Watch it. What are you saying here, boy?
Alchemists.
Yeah, what are those?
You know, the ones who... a pinch of squirrel, eye of squirrel, a pinch of eye of newt.
Mm.
I actually learned a few little things from Legs
and Mickey
about
did,
the process.
Mickey did a great, great job with his voice and the punchlines and the jokes. I mean, I think I... could set jokes up, but Mickey could always top them.
Because I'm a Jew.
Yeah.
So did you like do an outline?
And I'm a mix. So, yeah.
So how did you do this? You did like an outline and then...
No outline.
Did you talk like into a recorder? And
I
then
did
you
some
a,
of that, and that's you know? What Legs actually, how he wanted, he perceived the book to be because... Because
I really liked Mickey's voice, you know.
And he had been doing these oral histories, and that's what he was in that world.
We kind of merged...
The last thing I wanted was an oral history. I wanted to write the story from my heart and from my head and with all the emotions I was feeling and not have it be an impersonal oral history.
Mickey actually came up with a great term for what we did. He called it a memography, a memoir / biography, which I think is really kind of apt because we do have a lot of quotes. We cut to a lot of different people throughout the book to move the story along, which I think helps. But Mickey's
actually,
voice.
Why I wanted to do this with Legs because my agent wanted me to do it with somebody else that he represented, of course. He got the commission. Sorry, Mel, but that's the way it is. But I wanted to do it with Legs because I wanted to try and combine an oral history with a narrative.
A memoir.
But it proved to be a little too choppy. Mm-hmm. So... that's when Simon and Schuster said,
we want your voice, and we want to use your voice.
And I kept trying to take myself out of this story because I didn't want, because I'm an insecure little idiot, and I was afraid everybody's going to say, you're just using Joey to make this book all about yourself. And so I kept trying to take myself out of it, and Legs encouraged me, and Simon and Schuster did to... You got to tell the real thing.
We
prefer it to come off as a person with the personal approach
rather than all these different characters talking.
And I'm really
proud of Mickey and really proud of the book.
Legs did. Sometimes when I'm recalling all these things in my mind and going through some of these crazy stories, it was very emotional and I'd get very angry. Yeah. And Legs would. Help me,
maybe you shouldn't say this line.
Exactly.
Maybe we should tone maybe this comment.
Maybe we say, are you sure you want your mom to read it?
His mom was still alive at the time. Poor Charlotte died, and thank God we got to dedicate the book to her.
Right.
Because Mickey's mom was the greatest rock and roll mom.
There would be no Joey Ramone, without this woman.
So what was did she have like a favorite dish she'd cook you guys?
Did she?
Well, I don't know if it was her favorite dish to cook us, but our favorite dish of hers was chicken and rice with peas.
Yeah.
chicken and yellow rice with the
with
Campbell's cream of mushroom soup. I don't know how she did it, but that was one of them.
Do you ever have that again since then, or?
No.
No.
Can you cook it?
Oh, that's sad. No, that's sad.
Well, sometimes you remember tastes from your childhood.
Does anybody deliver?
Yeah. Right. You know, you get those tastes.
Yeah.
You remember that, and you never seem to get it. But sometimes it comes back when you go places.
It's true.
So, what's your future now? What do you besides now maybe getting a movie deal on this, which would be great because all the music's going to be revived. Right. You got the soundtrack. You got. Right. Lots of cool stuff you can.
I'm thinking one of the greatest rewards I'll be able to accomplish via a movie even more than the book is that the fact is that so many people still don't know who the Ramones are. You know, I mean, our friend Ryan here was at the hockey game last night, right? Were they playing Hey Ho, Let's Go? No, really not there? Usually it's just about every ball game, every arena. Even when I was watching the Olympics in China, they were you'd hear, hey, ho,
in China?
Let's go.
Really?
Yeah, even there.
Who did that?
Yeah. That's exactly right. In Queens, even in Shea Stadium, where we're all from, people are hearing that song, but they don't know who it is. So if we can get a movie made of that.
Hey, ho, let's go.
Talk about the bands that you're in.
The latest CD I made was a band I'm currently reforming called Stop, and we did one tour of England in 1996.
My favorite of Mickey's. I play this all the time. In fact, Ryan has it on the iPod, so we listen to it in the car. Mm-hmm. But Ryan picked all the bad songs.
What's your favorite song on here?
Outsider, that he did a cover version of Dee Dee's Dee Dee did this Ramon song called I'm an Outsider, and Mickey slowed it down, and it's really great. And he also did a great, great cover of Ring of Fire, and also The Idiot Son of 007, which is a great song. And what's the song? I never know the name. With Bones and Buried, and it's
Go Please Yourself.
Go Please Yourself. Yeah. I like that song a lot. It's really
good. Please Yourself. It sounds like.
Well, leave that to your imagination.
Yeah. It's a really good album.
Great album, but unfortunately it was a little independent label. The guy made a few thousand copies. We went to England, played live on the BBC. They sold out every copy. Then the guy got married, and his wife said, I want you out of the music business. And
they went out of business.
The band broke up, and because, you know, we were broke after the tour in England, you know. And then, unfortunately, my brother passed away, and I haven't been able to get things going again until... And then I started writing this book. So as soon as we get back, I'm going to, finally get back to being able to play guitar and get this band back together and get my ass back on a stage.
Well, we got to have you come here to our stage and play live.
That'd be great. You guys,
a whole set of music fully plugged in with all your stuff.
And, nice. Appreciate it. That'd be fun.
Well, I want to help everybody that needs help, especially when you've been screwed over with these independent record companies. Then the ladies get involved and change the whole entire direction. Now, is he happy that he did that, you think?
I haven't heard from him since, to be honest, so I don't know.
Because sometimes, you know, when you're forced to do those things, you know, either you're going to do this or I'm leaving, you know.
But people also think that Mickey was just... people have accused Mickey of riding on Joey's coattails, which I think is really unfair, because when Mickey was in the Rattlers, they were doing very, very well. They were opening for the Clash at Bonds. I mean, Mickey had a real viable career in the 80s in rock and roll music, which people don't tend to forget, or, you know, just say, oh, he's the younger brother. But Mickey was doing quite well, you know, at that time, which... people tend to forget.
Mm-hmm. You know? I guess it's a common thing, though, kind of, when there is one person in a family who's successful, and then there's another sibling or son or whatever, and they come along.
Yeah, but you were signed to FBI.
No, I was doing well, but the assumption is always that, you know, they got into it just because their older brother or father was famous and successful.
Got into it because you wanted to get into it. I mean, you could have been a doctor or a lawyer.
As I started to say before I pushed legs to the side, I started playing when I was 10 years old. And when I was 14, I was in a band with John and Tommy. I was playing before my brother even thought about started playing.
Because he was the shy one that wasn't going to be probably...
He's also the one that introduced Johnny... to Joey. Uh-huh. You know, I mean, Johnny was hanging out with Mickey for years before he became friends with Joey.
So it's kind of funny to hear people say that, you know, make the assumption that I just started playing in 1980.
The reality is, probably because you were playing, you inspired, you did something there to make him get excited about music.
It's very true.
You guys were always sharing records. You guys were always into music together.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, we had one little bank that we would, you know, put the same amount of money in so that we could go buy records. Sure. And we shared everything, you know, that way. So.
And Joey actually even produced... Purple Majesty. And like when he was 14, Joey actually took them into the studio.
When I was 14, I was in a band with Johnny already.
Right. Okay, so
when I was 12.
12. Joey produced.
Joey was 16. I had a band called Purple Majesty.
And that's in the book, too.
It's in the book. Yeah. Did you? Oh, you read it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm forgetting a lot of it because, you know, I got short-term memory.
It's okay. Most of the interviewers have not even touched the book or, you know.
No, I had it. I've been going through it. It's been, I just got it 2 days ago. So, I still have a little more, but I've gone through enough of it, too.
So we had this band, Purple Majesty. We used to rehearse in the basement, and we had written a couple of original songs. And Joey was, I guess, so inspired by Phil Spector or whatever. Just to give you an idea of the entrepreneurial aspect of and how Joey was so deeply involved, not only in playing music, but every aspect of it.
He loved everything about rock and roll.
Right, putting on shows, producing bands. So 16 years old, he tells us he wants to produce a single for us. You know, we're 12-year-old kids. He takes us into this studio across
in
the street
Manhattan,
from
too, wow, which from, is like
that's
which
like big time. Big
deal.
Yeah.
Big
deal. And he produced a 2-song single for us. Wow.
What,
yeah.
what were the songs?
One song was the old blues project classic, "I Can't Keep from Crying."
Wow.
And the other one was an original we wrote called "In This Day and Age."
Was it any good?
Yeah, it was very good. Actually, I lost track of my copy, but the guitar player from that band had given his copy to a friend who just found it in the back of
an acetate. Oh, that's great.
So I have cool. a copy of this, yeah. finally.
Oh, this is going to be in the movie, right? This is a pivotal scene because, you know, you're going to take it back to the early, early days with the messy rooms. And
I would think that something like that would be worthy of being in the movie.
I can see that. You're going to have to recreate the old studio with
a 16-year-old kid producing a record.
That's
pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to have numbers of actors at different stages and ages to play the different parts.
Yeah.
You know?
True.
And that's Samuel Bear. It's all his fault.
Oh.
And he's another one. He's another one.
Mm-hmm. Is that part of the conspiracy thing? Or
I think so. A corporate conspiracy. You know, we used him for a video.
Really?
For Poison Heart. It was a horrible video. Horrible. Everybody hated that video.
I didn't hate it. I liked the song. What was wrong with it?
No, I loved the song. The video sucked. It's terrible.
Oh. Well, here it is right now in your alternative show from downtown Chicago. And you got to pick up an awesome book, I Slept with Joey Ramone. Actually, I didn't. You didn't either, actually. You were in the same room.
No, I slept with Joey Ramone.
Whenever you'd watch The Crawling Eye or what's that one?
Invaders from Mars.
Invaders from Mars scared the crap out of me.
Oh, really?
Remember they put the little chips in the parents' brains so you can't trust
and
your
parents? They would sink down into the sand.
Sand,
right?
Yeah, right.
Wow.
Yeah, in the backyard.
They only had three fingers.
I think they only had three sets. The backyard with the fence.
Big budget movie.
And one lighting set because it was always kind of dusk or something.
Yeah, right. And underneath the sand, they had the Martians who walked really funny, didn't move their arms.
So typically, if you know a 2-year-old kid who gets scared and thinks there's monsters under his bed and they're going to get me, I would go and sleep in my big brother's bed.
I didn't understand where those big guys with the markings. You notice that? It was kind of like a bad Pet Sematary ripoff kind of video.
This is an awesome book. It's going to be an awesome, awesome movie, so make sure you pick it up. If there are bookstores still left, when you just told me Borders is closing, that is like, and I mean.
Well, that's Borders is closing next year. There was a thing on AOL. It was like brands that will not be appearing in 2010.
Wow.
And I was really shocked to see that Borders is going out of business. And also Newsweek. You know, it's just, I mean, we live in, you know, this digital age where everything's changing.
It's disposable digital. Seems like all the trusted things that we've grew up on are all like, well, we don't care about those anymore, and we have this new thing here.
It's bizarre, you know. You get everything downloaded. You don't have a product anymore. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, well, even this book you can get online.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like, you know.
An e-book or a Kindle.
Anyway, you should be able to.
Yeah, I mean, you can read it. Yeah, it's like, you know, I mean, it's like, I like still reading, you know, the old-fashioned way where you take your glasses off and, you know.
Well, I have to put my glasses on. That age.
Cool. Yeah. Well, anything else you want to talk about that we didn't catch on with the book here and, you know, that we want to get in?
I don't know, you want to talk about the hockey game last night? No, I think we covered a lot, and we appreciate it very much, and we were thrilled to be here.
It was a lot of fun to be here.
Thank you all out there for watching us, and we appreciate you watching us watch Joe. Jerry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I'm not Joey. You've been on the road too long promoting this. I know we look alike and sound alike.
You know, he might look a lot like you at this stage of the game if he had survived.
Yeah. But when I had him here at the studio, it was just, you know, it's just one of those special times. I didn't want to do like normal interviews. And we just sort of sat around like we're doing now and, you know, just started talking. And you know, it's just about what is really happening versus, well, you know, here are the questions we should ask you, you know.
Right. Well, we miss him terribly, as I'm sure all his fans do. And
then at the very end, you guys really reunited again.
Thankfully, we did. I mean, that's what made it such a beautiful ending. And I don't, if it, that didn't happen, I certainly would never have written this book, because it just it would have been a kind of a ugly ending. But yes, it was a, we had a great reconciliation, and which just makes even.
I couldn't read the end.
We had a reading in Legs' house. Before we were doing the last edits, we read it out loud because we wanted to see if you fumble over any words. Uh-huh. And
it's really great to do an oral.
There are some guys,
edit,
in Legs' neighborhood who have a band, a hardcore band called the Cutoffs.
Yeah, great band.
They're hardcore guys, right?
Uh-huh.
And these guys were in tears. Mm. When we were reading this last chapter.
Well, it's a sad story, especially what he had to go through at the end,
right,
you know?
Right.
And I sometimes wonder if the doctors really, if they should try to, you know, help these things along. You know, I don't know, you know, it's
I think that doctor did, from what you've told me, he did everything.
He was a great doctor, and you know, unfortunately, he did everything possible, but they just couldn't save him.
Yeah, you know? There's just certain, you know, diseases that, I don't know, you know.
Joey also would... had to go up, and because of his OCD, he had to go up to his chiropractors and touch the door, step off the curb, and he did that, and he went home, and then he went back, and in the interim it had started snowing, and when he went back to touch the curb at the chiropractors, that's when he slipped and broke his hip. And because he was all on these blood thinning medicines for the lymphoma.
Legs brings up a subject that we should probably cover here, because the main message I think that we both wanted to get across in this story is how much adversity this guy overcame, and how many challenges he was faced with from the day he was born. He had neurological problems and some emotional problems, and was diagnosed as
paranoid schizophrenic.
You know,
from St. Vincent's Hospital,
he had OCD that was like far worse than the average case of OCD. And when he was diagnosed with the lymphoma, he was on several cancer fighting drugs. But then his legs was saying the OCD. Finally got the best of him, because it was a snowy, horrible, freezing morning, but he felt compelled to go uptown to his chiropractor's office just to touch the doorknob or push the button.
Whatever the OCD thing was.
He slipped on the ice, broke his hip, and while they were doing a hip transplant surgery, they had to take him off of the cancer drugs so that they could put him on Coumadin, you know, a blood thinning agent. And that's when his condition began to spiral downward. And
right before that, they were going to announce that this leukemia was in remission.
Lymphoma
was in remission, which is what's so horrifying about this, you know, and so sad. And it makes it so tragic, you know, because he could still be here, you know. And we could still be hearing Joey Ramone songs. Mm-hmm. And you're actually going to put on a new...
There is something for all Joey Ramone fans and Ramones fans and music fans everywhere can look forward to. There were some demos that he had begun working on that didn't get finished. And we're working... Ed Stasium...
Who produced all the Ramones, you know, worked...
He produced lost material.
Yeah.
Really good stuff, but great song about great New York songs. City, which he just played for me the other night. It was great.
Great stuff. I'll try and send some of it to you.
Oh, absolutely. Just... I'm getting goosebumps listening to this, because the music...
It's great.
The body of music that's there, you know, that will live on forever and ever and ever. And then now that you found this new stuff out there, you know, how'd you find that? It's just on master tapes laying around?
A few songs that are going to be on this next album are songs that I had on my little four-track Fostex that I had, you know, when my brother would have an idea for a song, he'd call me up and I'd have to drag my bass and my Fostex and everything over there to his apartment and put these
things. You didn't have your Apple computer in the palm of your hand?
And I threw that out. I wanted to go old school. So, I had some of these, the beginning of these songs on tape, and some of those I worked up. Actually, I have one here I could give to you. So there'll be some of those, and some of these other ones that we're talking about were done at this friend of his, Daniel Ray's house. He had a little studio in his apartment, and
Daniel Ray was the guy who worked with Joey on his first solo album, Don't Worry About Me.
Right. Yeah. Daniel also co-wrote some songs with Dee Dee. He had written,
I Don't Want to Be Buried in No Pet Cemetery. He wrote Pet Cemetery with Dee Dee and was a real prolific kind of facilitator of the Ramones and helped them produce stuff and write stuff and get them down.
We knew about these songs for 8 years now, but unfortunately, Daniel decided he wanted to be reciprocated for his work for and receive a check of $100,000, which was...
Boy, that amount, it's the prominent figure in the book, isn't it?
Yeah, 100 grand.
Yeah, yeah, throw out a figure, 100 grand.
A recurring figure. But so finally, after 8 years and a lot of legal bills, we came to
an agreement.
He turned the tapes over to us. And Ed Stasium, who produced "Road to Ruin" with Tommy, I want to be sedated. I just want to have something to do. All these great songs. Ed is working on them now.
Great. Well, so, make a video with all this. Yeah, I mean, you have to. Because we'll play it here on JBTV, and we'll support it 100% because this music has to live on.
I want to be in it in the gorilla suit too.
I thought you were. This isn't the gorilla suit.
No, you know, I just found pictures of me with the Ramones in the gorilla suit with the head off. With me in the gorilla. Oh, yeah, and I have these nerdy
glasses.
That
gorilla costume in the movie is going to cost 100 grand.
Yeah. I just thought I'd break it to you now.
Wait a minute, that's the whole budget for the movie. 100 grand.
Cut it. You're out.
We got to have that scene, you know. But and then the scenes at the end, of course, in the hospital and everything, you know. And
Almost a story with the Hollywood ending. I mean, you know, I hate to call it that, but it's the way it turned out. With the
one of his ex girlfriends even said Joey died on cue. They played the U2 song, Arlene. Yeah,
yeah. You brought that in the play for him.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like he. During the song, it was like...
What was the song? In a Little While?
In a Little While.
Yeah. And when the song was over, Joey was gone. Wow.
We got the call from the hospital saying, you know, it's time, you guys should come in. And I had that song in my head. Because actually, when Joey first came into the hospital, he asked for two CDs. There was a new Beatles release called Beatles 1. Yeah. And he wanted that and the new U2 album. And he would wake up, and we'd play in the morning. He always wanted to hear It's a Beautiful Day, because he thought the song gave him energy. And so we'd play that for him all the time. But somehow that song in a little while was in my head, and I thought it might be just nice to have some nice soothing music for him to pass on to the next realm. And we didn't know what was going to happen that day, but I put that song on, and 2 seconds after it was over, the nurse said, "He's gone."
Hey, can I ask you, Mickey, it's something I never asked you. I was just thinking, did Joey ever come to you in a dream while you were writing the song or appear to you or talk to you?
While I was writing...
While writing this book.
Yeah. Writing this book?
Yeah.
No, he didn't.
No, I never had any of those. You know, people always talk about having those
I mean, I had dreams thing. That he was in, but he didn't come to me.
I've never had any of those myself. I was just wondering.
I've heard a lot of people have. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
But
I've never had an experience like that.
Because sometimes you think when you know, they're always like, they're there still, you know, in the spiritual world. So looking out right now at this interview going, what the heck are they talking about now?
Well, we still see him all over the place, you know, so.
And we hear
not only
everywhere.
In my dreams.
Yeah, we hear them everywhere.
Good luck on this book tour, and I know it's a hard thing to do, go out and sell what you've done and everything, but I think when the movie comes out, there'll be a whole new appreciation for this because, you know, a lot of people, they forget so fast about how great, even during the time when MTV wouldn't even support the Ramones, when they needed the support that they needed, and what would it mean to them? You know, they were playing all this stuff, you know.
No, it's definitely been... a blast, as they say, in showbiz, and I've definitely enjoyed it, and now I'm in my pivotal transitional phase, and actually we're going to retire the band next year.
No, now you said this last time. You said, we're going to retire this stuff.
Yeah, well, actually now Johnny wants to retire the band. And, you know, I agree. It's been 21 years of blissfulness and total, you know, band bonding and all that good stuff, you know. And it's like, I think it's time to, you know, see what else is out there, you know.
Uh-huh. I was saying it's about a guy who was who overcame so much adversity, right, to the
why,
guy.
Which is why we felt compelled to put in why he'd been diagnosed. We didn't just do this to be cool. We were saying in order for him to be, I think it makes him even more heroic. Because when you're diagnosed as being paranoid.
I got to tell you, though, something wrong with your CD.
What's that?
Well, it says 13 cuts, but they're really 14.
I know.
So how did this happen? We want to know all the undercover information.
Well, actually, it was funny because it was a surprise to me too. You know, like I mean, because I heard the promo demo, and you know, and ended with Born to Die in Berlin. Then when I got the CD, I had gotten the one from we were just in Europe, so I had gotten the Chrysalis one, and I was listening to it. And after it ended, I didn't, like, get up to take it off right away. And all of a sudden, to my amazement, there was another song.
Uh-huh.
And I said, wow, what's... You know, I said, I called up the office, you know, I said, somebody, you know... And then I found out it was on all of them, on the American ones, too.
Wow.
So it was a kind of an accident, you know, sleight of hand. But it's kind of cool. And the funny thing is because it came about because of an album that's coming out in October called Cartoon's Greatest Hits. That's a party, like an alternative party record, where all the bands recorded their favorite original cartoon themes between the 50s and now. And so we did a version of Spider-Man, a different version, and with this guy, what's his name? Ralph Saul, yeah. And he does a lot of concept records. And so we did a version with him. And then we put a version on our album. But it wasn't supposed to stay on because of this particular record coming out in October. But somebody screwed up.
And now I made it public, you know. No, this could have been kept undercover. Nobody would have known.
Yeah, well, you know... it wouldn't be any fun if no one knew about it. Uh-huh. And then 5 years from now, they said, oh, did you know what? There was this secret cut on that record. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's... Well, I mean, it will be a surprise anyway because probably most people don't know about it. And now they'll find out there was a bonanza on the end, you know? And they'll say, wow, that's great. What a surprise.
The reason why we put in... And we've taken some flack from it, why we put in the medical reports from St. Vincent's when Joey was self-committed himself and was diagnosed being paranoid schizophrenic. Why we put all this stuff in was to show what he had to overcome. And it also makes him, I think, 1,000 times more heroic instead of some, you know, rich kid who decided to become a rock star and just, you know, their parents bought him.
You have to show the depths he was at. Yeah. Where he sprung himself from,
and to still go out and
catapulted where he came from in order to become this, you know, worldwide iconic figure, rock star.
And we did take a lot of flack for it, and we still are from a certain faction of people. But on the other hand, I've received letters from I get a letter from a 17-year-old girl who read the book, and she just wanted to write and thank us for writing this book. She's been diagnosed with 15 mental illnesses. Wow. And she related to the story so well. And she had problems with her sister also. She realized she was pushing her away. And she was just so thankful for us telling the story, you know, and all bearing, right, you know.
And kids have come up to me and say, I have OCD, and so thank you so much for writing this book and you know, being a part of this and sharing this. And it, so it, that makes you feel like, oh, we did a good job.
Well, the OCD thing I never knew about, because I never noticed that in him when he was here. You know, I didn't see any of that, so, you know. Right.
Well, he could hide it some days very well. Mm-hmm. But if you're around him a lot,
he knew when people were watching him. I don't know how you could turn that switch on and off, but he was able to at certain points.
And I think going to the chiropractor that day, just because of that
right.
excessive compulsive behavior. Right.
Well, there were times he'd come back from a trip from England, and he'd call me up and ask me to drive him back to Kennedy Airport.
So he could touch the curb.
Just so he could walk back through the door or step off the curb, wow. you know, things like that. So he had it bad.
We had a rule, I remember in the very early days, Joey would step on and off the curb, and people would look at me, and I'd say, if you want to hang out with us, don't ask. Right. You know, just shut up. You know, otherwise, get out of here, you know.
And it was an exercise routine.
Well, that's what he would say.
Yeah,
that's
what he'd say. Yeah, he'd say, I'm stuck.
I'm working out.
You know, he'd say, I'm stuck.
Right.
You know, so I got stuck.
I thought something was loose or something.
Yeah. You know? He was very funny.
He was funny, man. Really yeah.
I'd like to see TV change for the better.
Uh-huh.
You know? If I see the Ramones one more time on MTV, I'll go crazy.
Have they been playing it a lot?
No.
Oh. Why not? They can play Michael Jackson. Well, I guess it's the cost of the video. See, your video wasn't $40 million. See,
it's a sleeper.
Ah.
You know? It's a seether. Yeah. Well, that's a great video. It's a really cool video. And
I don't want to grow up.
Yeah, it's kind of like an animation. Daniel Close did the animation. He's a very cool underground artiste, mm-hmm. and he's a big fan of the Ramones, and he just got married, and he's on his honeymoon, and we had to call him off his honeymoon. It's like, come on, Daniel, you know, you got to do this for us, and he did.
Wow.
Yeah.
His wife must have loved that.
yeah. Well, she was, you know, a good sport.
Uh-huh.
So
how long were they married before you called them back? Like hours, or?
I think he just slipped the ring on her finger, and... And he did, but he did us a favor.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean...
Well, at least he had time to, you know...
Chivalry is not dead. I mean, he, you know, he maintained his honor mm-hmm. and loyalty mm-hmm. and devotion. And we appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, immensely.
I suppose when you look at it, when you wrote the book, there's probably a million other things that you thought about after it was sort of done. Boy, why didn't I put that in there? Really?
I thought of all that stuff before, and then we had to cut it out.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So you did edit a lot of stuff out.
Oh, yeah.
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 Well, we wanted it to read
very, very fast. That's what our main concern was. Once we got it all assembled, then we went, okay, what do we really need? Mm-hmm. How can we make this read like a Ramones song, which I think the book does, which is to it.
Are you going to get this on Oprah's book club?
I'm trying. Is it? Well, you got her number?
Yeah, let's call Oprah. Oprah, this is a book that you should actually have all of your viewers get onto, because it's an amazing book. It's part of rock and roll history, and it involves all the great doctors that she knows already.
But not only that, it's inspiring, especially to people who can relate to it and on the level that...
Anyone who's come from a dysfunctional family, which is... 99% of America will be able to relate to this book, mm-hmm. you know. So,
dysfunctional families do make creative things.
This is a guy who doctors said would never be able to function in society on his own, and who told my mom and I, this guy's going to be a vegetable. You're going to have to take care of him the rest of his life, and here he is. So,
and then to go up in front of
Oprah.
Yeah, Oprah. Enough with this precious stuff.
Yeah.
Well, move on to I Slept with Joey Ramone.
Yeah, that's back when MTV would play anything that came in the front door. Right. It's like, geez, you know, we got 24 hours of time here. Let's get some videos on this channel.
You know, we used to get like a heavy play on MTV back in...
I remember.
In 1983. That was before when no one believed in them, mm-hmm. right? When no one... The Stones and Aerosmith, no one believed in MTV. It was a fad, a phase, a charade. But it took legs,
mm-hmm.
caught on, tentacles.
But we haven't changed. We're still down to earth, and you know, we still do the same old things here.
Well, that's why I'm here.
Yeah. And we love it that you're here. To go through all that adversity in early life, through all that, and then to go on stage and put on a show like you know, the history shows, and it's just amazing.
Gotta give the guy credit.
Yeah.
You know, I sang on the first Ramones album. I was the roadie at the time. I actually, you want a little bit of background?
Let's go through it.
Okay,
yeah.
Then we gotta start way back. You know. Just yeah, that's right. All right, perfect. Here we go. All right, now let's start the interview. All right. So when I was 10 years old, I was introduced to...
When I was 10 years old, we're going that leave far him back.
Up, wait a minute. I got that.
Is this door open?
When I was 10 years old, it all started in a 50,000-watt radio station. And I can't get me over the bumps, can you?
All right, no, but we can do this.
Well, there's a lot of speed bumps at that 50,000-watt radio
station. I know... Just entertain yourself.
Any answer that starts off with when I was 10 years old, you know it's going to be a long one.
That's right.
So let's go.
We got an hour.
Oh, okay. Oh, we got an hour. Then fill it up. All right.
Hey, it's not often we get to do these free-form interviews, is it?
Oh, no. He's 10 years old. Go on. Yeah. Let's hear it.
So, thanks for being on JBTV.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks so much. Here.
Really appreciate it.
And whatever we can do for you, any music you want to come down and play on our stage, we'll put it on the show. And we'll do it 9 HD cameras. And
can you come to New York?
Well, I don't travel much. I mean, I've got the other compulsive problem. I don't leave.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. So till next week, it's Jerry Bryant signing off from the Windy City, downtown Chicago. Bye-bye. Stay high, but of course, keep on rocking and rolling with the best music anywhere. The Ramones, I Slept with Joey Ramone. It's the book. Pick it up. There it is, right there.
At finer bookstores everywhere.
Yes, and definitely online. Yes.
Go to the JBTV podcast, where we bring you the best music, the best interviews, and it's all unscripted and totally unrehearsed. Follow us on all the social media and spread the word. This is JBTV Music Television, the JBTV podcast.
JBTV.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.